So, let me start negative. No genetics today. So I actually would love to talk about our genetic models of speciation, but because this conference is more geared towards the ecological side, I thought that today I should do the same. So I will focus on the ecological conditions for evolutionary branching. And as you know, evolutionary branching can be paraphrased as the evolution to disruptive selection or diversification, and it provides the ecological context for speciation. It is not sufficient for speciation because certainly there are genetic ways how to thwart the process, but at least this we could take as a necessary condition for non-allopatric speciation. So what are conditions for evolutionary branching in a very general sense? I will not tackle any concrete model today, but I will ask two general questions. The first is that if we have an ecological system, whatever it might be, if it has several niches, and now I will use these several niches in the sense of several environmental feedback variables, which will be hopefully clear in my formulas. So if we do have several niches, do we have coexistence? And second, if we do have coexistence, do we have evolutionary branching as well? And there is one important way in which I will limit these two questions, because I'm interested in incipient speciation or evolutionary branching, so the very beginning of the split from one into two. I will be interested in the coexistence of species or strategies in a clonal setting which have similar traits, so which have not diverged yet considerably, which are just in the beginning of the branching process. So when I say coexistence, I always mean coexistence of similar types. And this poses immediately a problem, which I'd like to show in a framework which actually I just copied from Geza, and I think that these few slides overlap with his talk yesterday, but perhaps this is a good starting point to make up the connection. So in a very general way, to describe coexistence in an arbitrary ecological system, we might take a system of equations which describe the change in population density. So this n of I is the population density of the I species or I strategy trait value. And it is given as the current density times, and this is the important part, the per capita growth rate, which depends on many things. Depends on traits. These F1 to Fm are the trait values, and for the time being, I will treat them as constants because I'm just talking about coexistence of given types. Later, they will also become variables. Then it depends on the number of environmental feedbacks. So now, here, think of, for example, the density of food or density of predators, density of pathogens. So whatever environmental effects impact on the population growth of the focal species. And then there is the abiotic environment, which is here represented by a scalar xi. It also could be a list of xi 1 to xi something, but actually a single variable is sufficient for my purposes, so I take this as a scalar, but it's straightforward to extend it to an arbitrary number of xi's. And in equilibrium, of course, population growth should be zero, and then we get as many equations, as many species we want to coexist, but the unknowns are these environmental feedback variables because the traits are now considered constant, and of course the abiotic environment is something given externally. So we have equations for these n variables, and if we have k species, so k equations with n unknowns, then we can solve these equations only if n is at least as many as k, so if we have at least as many environmental feedbacks as species. This is, of course, a very well-known fact that if we don't have enough environmental feedbacks, or if we don't have enough niches, if you like, then the competitive exclusion principle applies and we don't have coexistence. So if we want to focus on evolutionary branching, so it means that we want one species to split into two, then of course the minimum requirement is to have two niches or two environmental feedbacks, and this is something which I will assume throughout. This last equation is here just as a footnote that the feedback variables themselves are biological variables like the density of prey, so they have their own dynamics, but we don't have to go into details there. What we do want to know is whether this coexistence is robust if we change the external environment. So if we change this variable which describes the abiotic environment, what if there is global warming, for example? The abiotic environment is changing. Is coexistence robust with respect to this change? It's given by this equation. This comes from Messina et al. TPB, which is, I heard it was several times referenced already yesterday. Really very nice paper. But again, I don't have to go into details here. The only thing is that this bold case N is actually the least of all densities, so it's a vector. And it changes according to this formula. The only important thing is that we have a denominator here. And obviously, if the denominator is close to zero, then the quantity itself is huge. So if the denominator is close to zero, then there is a huge change in densities if we change the abiotic environment, which means that with a small change in the abiotic environment, some of the densities will run into zero and some species will die out. And then coexistence is not robust. So we have to figure out what this denominator is. And it's actually the determinant of a matrix. And if the matrix is close to so-called singular, then the determinant is zero, and then we run into this problem. So what is this matrix A? Still with the same paper, it can be decomposed as a product of a matrix which contains the so-called sensitivities. So how much the per capita growth rate of the I species changes if we change the biotic feedback variables, so density of prey and similar feedback variables, and then we change each one of them. So how sensitive the per capita growth rate is to the feedback variables. And then the second part is the so-called impact of the focal species on the environment of variables, which is given by this, but again, we don't have to go much into detail here. It would be nice to get rid of this little box. Yes, now that you can see everything. So what if we have two species or two strategies which have similar traits? Then if you look into this line, it turns out that the sensitivities are similar. Because here, the only way how these formulas depend on I, on the identity of the species, is through the trait values. So if the trait values are similar between two species, then also the sensitivities are similar by continuity. So it means that we have two rows in this matrix which are very close to each other, but as you all know, if two rows of a matrix are identical, then the matrix is singular, and also this product is singular. And if we are close to this situation, then the matrix is close to singular, which means that it has an almost vanishing determinant that was the denominator. So there is no robust coexistence if two species are similar to each other. And this seems to kill speciation at the onset, because similar species generically cannot coexist, or at least we need to be very lucky to have the abiotic environment just right. Otherwise, they don't coexist. And this is, of course, something which has been known for a long time in specific models. Now, the previous treatment was a very general one. But, for example, in population genetics, in the context of the very simple Levy model, this has been known since the 80s, that, or actually even before that, that there is no robust polymorphism, translation to ecology, no robust coexistence under weak selection. But if two alleles or two trait values are similar, then obviously selection is weak. There is hardly any difference between them. So we are back to this problem that similar alleles, similar trait values will not coexist. This example comes from a paper of Hoekstra, who looked at the Levy model and concluded that with small selection coefficients, so with weak selection, the only abiotic environmental variable of the Levy model, which is the relative size of the habitats, needs to be in a very narrow range in order to have polymorphism or coexistence of alleles. Outside this very narrow range, either one allele goes to fixation, one trait wins, or the other. So we need fine-tuning of the abiotic environment in order to have coexistence, which is, of course, very unlikely in nature. And this is something that already Maynard Smith in his 66 paper saw as a major obstacle to speciation. Now, if we allow for a broader way of variability of trait values, if we suppose that there is a continuous variation of potential trait values rather than just two, then the situation changes. And this is how adaptive dynamics actually explains how the former problem can be avoided. So if we have a resident trait value, an arbitrary initial point somewhere here, and then we have a mutant who is only a little bit different from the resident. So along this diagonal line, the mutant equals to the resident. And here we have a mutant who is only a little bit different from the resident. And in accordance with all what I have said so far, this mutant generically cannot coexist with the resident. So what happens is if the mutant can invade, then it will also replace the resident and we make a step in trait space. And this repeats until we get to this singular point here. The same story applies from above. So yes, a resident and a mutant who are similar to each other cannot coexist. That's how it is. But by not coexisting, we get a trait substitution sequence, and we are going somewhere in trait space. So there is evolution towards a specific point, the so-called singular point. And in the neighborhood of this singular point, there is coexistence. So there is fine-tuning, yes, but fine-tuning is done by evolution itself. Now, this singularity here is, of course, just one example of the agenetic cases. The rest you can study on my back. There is only one thing I need to highlight here. The little ugly sister of coexistence is mutual exclusion. Now, coexistence I spoke about so far is most often understood as so-called protected coexistence, where one species can invade the other. So this is an equilibrium with only the first species or trait value present, and this can be invaded by the second, and vice versa. So mutual invasibility implies that there must be some sort of attractor in the interior, so there is coexistence. And this can happen in the neighborhood of half of the singular points on my back. But the other half predicts mutual exclusion, the situation that the first species cannot be invaded by the second, but vice versa, the second cannot be invaded by the first. So we can have a pairwise invisibility plot like this, where the minus-minus areas overlap instead of the plus areas overlapping. And in this case, in the neighborhood of the singularity, there is no coexistence, but there is mutual exclusion. This needs just the same amount of fine-tuning. This is also a degenerate situation from an ecological point of view, but evolution can take care of this fine-tuning, and we might end up at a singularity with mutual exclusion. So the temporary answer to my first question is that, yes, there is evolutionary fine-tuning towards coexistence. There is evolution to coexistence or to mutual exclusion. So we still have to take to sort out these two possibilities. But for the time being, let me jump to the second question, that if we do have coexistence after all, do we have evolutionary branching? Now, for simplicity, oh no, not yet. Okay, so say that there is a single trait which is evolving, but it's determining a number of observable traits, which then enter the per capita growth rate, so fitness. And this is the so-called invasion fitness of a new strain Y, so which has the trait value Y for this underlying trait. And it is trying to grow in an environment which is set by the resident X. And again, this bold F is just the list of all the Fs here. Now, if we vary the underlying trait value, then the Fs will covary, and this will generate trade-offs between the observable traits. And if you want to have evolutionary branching, then it is well known that these three things must be satisfied. We must evolve towards the singularity. This is called convergent stability. The singularity should not be evolutionally stable, because if it's an ESS, then we just stay there. So we need the lack of evolutionary stability, which means this condition. And we need that there is coexistence rather than mutual exclusion in the neighborhood, which again means this condition. But because the convergent stability is just the sum of these two quantities, it is obvious that if this holds and this holds, then it is only possible if M is negative. So in this one-dimensional case, the last condition is implied by the first two. This is not the case for in higher dimensional cases, but here it is. So we need these conditions to be satisfied. The thing is that usually we don't have the faintest idea what the trade-off looks like. So there are different ways to cope with this. The traditional thing is just to assume a plausible function with some parameters and then perform a bifurcation analysis in the terms of these parameters and say that, yeah, for those and those parameter values, we have an ESS, but here we might have a branching point, and then use other bifurcation parameters for this. So one can very nicely explore a model if one plugs in a trade-off function, but usually these functions just come from the blue sky. Now, there is a new way, building a model to derive these underlying trade-offs. This is now being done prominently in evolutionary epidemiology, where they use within-host models of pathogen growth to derive the trade-offs between epidemiological observable traits like virulence and transmission rate, for example. Or another way, an alternative way, is to say that we don't know what the trade-off is, and we allow for any shape of the trade-off, and we try to construct examples for branching. And if we fail, then we have a proof that branching is not possible for any trade-off. And if we manage, then we know how easy it was and what sort of trade-offs will give us branching. So, and I'll take this second route. Very briefly, it goes like this. We have the invasion fitness in terms of observable traits. Now, for simplicity, I took the underlying trait is one observable trait and one more, so only a single trade-off in this example. This is the condition for singularity, and this we might look at as an ordinary differential equation, solve it, and get these continuous lines here as a family of solutions to this ODE problem, and this is what are called critical functions. If we do know the trade-off function, where the trade-off is tangent to a critical function, that's the singularity. But if we want to construct examples, then we can demand that I want this point to be singular, and all what I have to do is to choose the slope of the trade-off function such that it is tangent to the critical function, and then the singularity condition is satisfied. The nice thing is that the condition for coexistence also depends only on the first derivative, so on the slope of the trade-off function. So immediately on this graph, I can tell apart those points where m is negative, permitting coexistence, and m is positive, leading to mutual exclusion. So those points with positive m are immediately out for branching. And then the condition what we still need is that we don't have evolutionary stability, and this condition depends on the convexity of the trade-off, on the second derivative, and this means that if I choose the singular point in the part of the graph where m was negative, it is possible always to choose the convexity just right so that we do have evolutionary branching because we have convergent stability and lack of evolutionary stability. So then we can construct examples. Whenever we find a point where m is negative, constructing an example for branching is possible. This is again how it goes in practice. We choose a point, we choose the slope of the trade-off such that the point is singular, we calculate m, if it's positive, bad luck, choose another point, if it's negative, all right, go on, and then we can find convexity such that there is branching. We repeat this for all points, and this will end up in two ways. Either we have an example for branching, so we have proven it's possible, or we have disproved branching by failing to find an example, but then we have disproved it for all conceivable trade-offs, for all infinitely rich possibilities possible trade-off functions, we have disproved branching. This goes very well also with numerical analysis and goes back to a number of people actually, first to Ulf and the co-author, and then this M business is between the lines of Bowers, and then we put it together, and this is a nice numerical example for it, so where it could be executed in a model which is analytically not tractable otherwise. So the answer to the second question is, yes, if there is coexistence at the singularity, so coexistence of similar types, then we can construct an example for evolutionary branching given one free trade-off function. And this question is actually a very important one for me because at the very beginning of my career, when we just started with adaptive dynamics and just discovered branching here, branching there, branching everywhere, then a late Friday afternoon I asked Geza if it might be so that every model which supports coexistence can also lead to branching, because it seemed so easy to get branching. And Geza said no. And he was ready with a counterexample, a model of Elner on the evolution of germination fraction, which clearly had coexistence, but always had an ESS, so no branching. But the model had only one trade-off, which was not a free trade-off, The trade-off was between the number of germinating seeds and the number of dormant seeds. And obviously, the two has to add up to 100%. So this is a fixed linear trade-off. There is no way to change. There is no flexibility in the model. And as it happened with the linear trade-off, the model did not keep crunching. But if we do have a free trade-off, where we don't know the shape, so we are free to choose the shape, then we can construct examples for branching whenever we have coexistence. Now, back to the coexistence problem, because this critical function analysis sort of logic can be lifted to a level higher, and we can actually construct models also with coexistence at will. We can find trade-offs which will support coexistence and then also branching by implication. So let me go back to the original model version where I have observable traits, and with one underlying trait, this generates M minus one trade-offs. No. We started 10 minutes later. Okay. And then, so now we have more flexibility with more trade-offs. And then I want to find a degenerate singular point, so a point which is singular and which has M equals zero, which is just on the knife edge between coexistence and mutual exclusion. And once I have this degenerate singularity, I can generically unfold it into positive or negative M. Of course, I want negative to get coexistence and then go on with this. There is only one slight problem, is that this equation is quadratic in the slopes. So when I want to solve this system of equations for the slopes of the trade-off functions, then it might be that there is no real solution. The quadratic equation does not always have a real solution. So here is a bit of mathematics to show that if we have enough trade-offs, we nevertheless can always solve those equations and get the degenerate point and unfold it then and find branching. So I'm afraid I have to skip this, although it's not at all that difficult. And this is a concrete model to illustrate the previous result, although here I am not constructing trade-offs, but constructing a function which is part of the environmental feedback. But the basic logic is the same. The details of the model are not at all important. This is an epidemiology model, a standard SIR model, with both direct and environmental transmission of the pathogen. But this is absolutely not interesting here. What is interesting is what can be done with any model, for example, with this model. Let me write down the invasion fitness. It has two environmental feedbacks. That's, of course, very important. Without two feedbacks, we can already stop. And then we construct part of the environmental feedback such that if this function g, whatever it is, it's part of the environmental feedback. It's just a function, but we don't know what it looks like, so we are trying to choose it in a clever way. And it turns out that if I can construct it like this, then I will have an optimization model, which is a very degenerate thing. Now, of course, a slight technical difficulty is that this curve is not a function because, yeah. But we can limit the range of the independent evolutionary variables such that this little piece is a function, and then we go on with this. And here is the corresponding pairwise invisibility plot with perfect skew symmetry. This is an optimization model. This we are going to unfold. So first we keep the slope at the point which was singular. So it means that we keep both the place of the singularity and the value of M. So M is still zero with this unfolding, but it's not an optimization model anymore. There is a very narrow cusp-shaped area here which has mutual exclusion. Then we go on further. We also change the slope. It means that M changes. And, of course, I will change it such that M becomes negative. And now we have a plus-plus wedge here. So now there is coexistence next to the singularity, and from here on it's only one step now to change a trade-off function of the model such that we have evolutionary branching. So we have constructed an example in this ecological context. One little footnote about unprotected coexistence. In adaptive dynamics, we're very preoccupied with protected coexistence because that can be seen from the pairwise invisibility plot where the plus overlaps with plus, there is mutual invasion. So there is coexistence. But of course, we know that unprotected coexistence is also a possibility where there is no mutual invasion, like here is the protected one. They mutually invade each other, and here not. Here this invades, but this does not, and yet there is an interior attractor, so there is coexistence. Now, It can be proven, has been proven here, that if we have a singular trait value where M is non-zero, then coexistence is always protected. So we almost always have this situation. But now I'm concentrating on those degenerate types of singularities where M is zero. And there, this cannot be excluded, and actually this one happens. As it has been very recently proven by Tadeusz Priklopil, the paper is still in press but available online at JMB, that when we unfold this degenerate singularity, then generically this unfolding leads to intersecting invasion boundaries. So this is the degenerate singularity, and as we start to unfold it, we get this picture where there is both mutual invisibility, coexistence, and mutual exclusion, and there is an intersection point here, and of course here too. And now what Tadeusz has also proven is that near these intersecting invasion boundaries, so somewhere here and here, there is unprotected coexistence. So it means that when we are doing these constructive methods, we are finding bound examples for unprotected coexistence, also near singular strategies, which we did not realize beforehand. And then basically, the questions to, the answers to the questions are yes and yes, given at least two feedbacks, of course, and as many free trade-offs as feedback. So if we have enough flexibility in the model in terms of unspecified trade-off functions, we are free to choose to construct examples, then we can get coexistence and we can get evolutionary branching. For the first yes, it is because coexistence depends both on feedbacks, these are the niches, and also on the trade-offs. If you think of a Darwinian demon who is doing everything perfectly, then nobody can coexist with him. He outcompetes everybody. So coexistence must depend on trade-offs. And indeed, if we have enough flexibility in the trade-offs, we can construct examples for coexistence. And this is entirely a tale of first derivatives or slopes. So we can somewhat divorce it from the answer to the second question, which is again yes. In here, we only need one free trade-off. And this is yes because evolutionary branching is something which has to sail between Skylla and Charybdis. If the trade-off is too concave, we always get an ESS. If it's too convex, you always get a repeller. The only question is if there is any space to go in between. But if we have coexistence, then it proves that, yes, there is a way between Skylla and Charybdis, and we can set the convexity of one trade-off such that we sail through. What is still missing from this talk is that here I treated trade-offs as absolutely free, which I can choose to my will because we don't know what they look like anyway. But of course we do know something. Often we know if the trade-off is increasing or decreasing, or maybe we even know whether it's concave or convex. So how to put more biological constraints on the trade-offs? In any concrete example, this is fairly easy to sort out, but I also would like to sort it out in the general model. Then one more difficult question is, what if we have several traits or species co-evolving? Some starts happen here. And the most difficult question is, what if we have several traits of the same species co-evolving? That's for the future. For the time being, I have yes and yes. Now, this concludes the talk, but actually I would like to ask for half a minute more to call your attention to a new possibility to put out short opinion pieces or current awareness articles. The Journal of Mathematical Biology would like to open more for the biologically oriented readership, so they are also coming now. Their main articles have introductions and discussions which are non-technical, not for mathematicians, to make more interconnections between the mathematical biology and the real biology community. And it's also launching a relatively new series of perspectives in mathematical biology, which is a really short thing. It's two printed pages, but absolute maximum four printed pages. It's edited by the European Society for Mathematical and Theoretical Biology. And there are already a number of such articles. So if you go to the GMB website, you can find these. There are some very nice ecology, like Peter Jager's for stochastic population dynamics, or Lambert on how population genetics failed to take ecology properly into account. And we are inviting submissions to this series. Everyone is very welcome. All instructions and details can be found on the Society website. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this very challenging talk. And please, we have some time for discussion and questions.
Is the critical function analysis about evolutionary branching invariant against nonlinear transformation of trait space?
Well, then you have to carry it out in the transformed variables, yes.
Then the shape of trait of function can be transformed into the shape of trait space.
Yes, but first you made a transformation and then you carry out this analysis. It's just about constructing examples or failing it and then proving that, yeah, there is no example.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
Julie. It was a very, very nice talk. And
So
what I would like to ask is, you gave a very convincing case of this fine-tuning that which happens at the evolutionary branching point. Could you please, if it's something where there's time, make it a little more intuitive by sort of describing the process in the context of, let's say, Lotka-Volterra model, of particularly which parameters I'm fine-tuned and how this separates.
The trait value is fine-tuned.
Sorry?
The trait value is fine-tuned.
So basically the R-naughts.
Whatever is evolving. If you want R-naught, well, R-naught evolving, generally higher I-naught is a good idea, so that's a trivial example. But you see, the classical ecological and population genetic view was that let's take two species which are fixed, or let's take two alleles which are fixed, and let's hope that they will somehow coexist. And they will not, because the environment has to be fine-tuned. But now let's turn this around. Let's keep the environment fixed, not the traits, but the environment fixed, as it is in reality. In a fixed environment, we can fine-tune the alleles or trait values. We are still fine-tuning, but this fine-tuning can be done by evolution.
But isn't it similar to the what we expect in reality, that that trade-offs, those things which determine whether speciation will occur or not, which is depend on the genetic background?
Yes, of course. Now here we treat trade-offs as unknown, but
yes.
Fixed.
But of course, these are not arbitrary in the real world.
Yeah, that is still a little bit missing from the theory, but
thank you very much for